using this fine moment as a pinnacle from which I might be listened to by the young men and young women already dedicated to the same anguish and travail, among whom is one who may someday stand where I stood this afternoon. Our tragedy today is a general and universal physical fear, so long sustained by now that we can even bear it. They are no longer problems of the spirit. There's only one question: when will I be blown up? Because of this, the young man, the young woman writing today has forgotten the problems of the human heart in conflict with itself, which alone can make good writing, because only that is worth writing about.
The idea of the Southern Renaissance evades many, and not for a lack of interest, but rather a lack of general awareness. It's just not something you hear a lot about in everyday conversation. It is, however, one of those beautiful things that simply is. It has a life and power all its own. I like to think of it as a great weapon against the less pleasant aspects of society. The right words can even illustrate the lighter side of the harshest of situations. It all started in the early to mid-1920s, and it was all about the evolution of American Southern literature. It was an exciting time for writers to make a difference with their words. After World War I, there was a creative endeavor that rose to temper the pain from and of the Civil War. It was a time when many still remember the loss of the Confederate nation in 1865, Reconstruction, and the misery of slavery. Words have enormous power to effectuate change, or at the very least, provide a sense of hope for change. The writers of this period were far enough away from the time of the Civil War and slavery to provide a reasonable degree of objectivity. Writers could deal with the real stories, the ones full of pain, drama, and most importantly, emotion. Everyone's story is important. William Faulkner employed what seemed to be a full measure of complexity in his novel published in 1930, As I Lie Dying. The novel was written over 6 weeks between the hours of midnight and 4 a.m., and not a single word was changed. There were many writers of the day that in some form or fashion gave voice to all the people. Writers such as Thomas Wolfe, Katherine Ann Porter, Alan Tate, Carolyn Gordon, and Tennessee Williams. It is important to note that Southern Renaissance is not necessarily about writing feel-good stories that make you smile. It was, however, the beginning of many great Southern writers that would take their place in history as the luminaries for today's creative writers who captivate the minds and imaginations of readers worldwide. I contacted Doc Lawrence, a learned man who is an amazing Southern writer and a good friend. I had a few questions for him regarding the Southern Renaissance and the South. I asked what makes Southern folks so unique. He said, "Well, that's easy. We are what we are, and we don't have to apologize for it." He went on to say, "We have a deep-seated belief in God, family, and country. We are children of war and understand sacrifice. We hope and pray for peace. We love dearly and extend compassion to friends and strangers who are hurting." I asked Doc if the Southern Renaissance is still alive today, to which he replied, "Heavens, yes. We had Pat Conroy, who wrote The Prince of Tides and The Great Santini. And then there's John Grisham, who is as Southern as cornbread." And the list went on and on. I know Doc is right. My bookshelves are lined with books written by great Southern authors. That's what I like about Doc. The only thing he loves more than the South is talking about the South and all the right she offers. It's important that we read books and more books. We need to read the newspaper every day. We learn a few things along the way, and we keep our minds working. I believe the Southern Renaissance is alive and well. I've seen it, I've heard it, and I felt it. And don't be surprised if one day, when reading a good book by a Southern author, you find yourself thinking and saying, "Hey, who told him my story?"